Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Hannah Farrell. Hannah, sorry for holding you there. Hannah, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Joe. How are you? I'm good.
Good. We spoke on Friday to Emer for a long time about her memory loss. First of all, you're obviously very young, as indeed Emer. Emer's only in her early 30s. What happened and what is your situation, Hannah?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, June 2017, I started to display like really strange symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So I started off with the flu, which escalated to glandular fever. And within a few weeks of having the glandular fever, I had slurred speech, memory loss. I was just acting really strange. I was really like dissociated from everything that was going on.
Okay.
And that escalated to being diagnosed with depression and being admitted to a psychiatric hospital 10 days after my 21st birthday.
Wow.
And I was diagnosed with borderline psychosis. And then I was there for 2 days and a psychologist tickled my feet and noticed I didn't react on one foot. And she kind of had indicated that possibly one side of my brain wasn't working correctly.
Okay.
And I was rushed off for an MRI and they took me straight to A&E and found out I had this really rare form of encephalitis called anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a long road ahead of me then. And I went through a lot of treatment. I had IVIG, steroids, I had 13 rounds of plasma exchange. And then finally what kind of nipped it in the bud was Rituxan, which is a form of chemotherapy. And 2 weeks after being on that, I woke up because I was unconscious for like 3 months. I was in a catatonic state.
Hannah, just your story is so important. I need to get a better line. I just need to get a better phone line.
Okay.
So stay with us. We'll ring. I won't call another break so quickly. Just while I am waiting on this coming Thursday morning, at 11 o'clock in St. Audians, which is in Dublin, obviously, St. Audians Park, where it's been beautifully restored and redone. And it's from Thursday, it will be known as the 1916 Children's Commemorative Play Garden. And it's in memory of the 40 children killed during the Easter Rising. They're named on the flagstones on the ground, and there's a beautiful plinth which explains what the memorial is about. But it's a beautiful garden, and I'll be there, and the Minister for Children and Youth Affairs, Catherine Sapone, will be there, and I presume the Lord Mayor and other people as well. But it's open to everyone, I'm told. It's a lovely park. Just go and see it. It's right beside the historic old city wall. It's right beside the historic St. Audience Church of Ireland Church and the St. Audience Catholic Church. So if you know any relatives, I've tried to contact them, as many as I can, any relatives of children who were killed in 1916, they are all very welcome, because it's the first time that their names of the children alone will be together, and appropriately enough, it is in a play garden. Hannah, you're back now on a better line, I hope. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, that's much better. Okay.
All right.
So you're 21.
I was 21 when I got admitted, yeah. So it was 2 years ago this month, and I was 20 when I first got the symptoms, because my birthday is in August, but it was June, and I had flu-like symptoms, and which escalated to glandular fever. And when I got the glandular fever, that's when things started to decline rapidly.
Okay.
So it wasn't, I had like extreme tiredness and fatigue, but everyone was putting that down to the glandular fever. But then I started to have slurred speech and memory loss.
Right.
So I actually went over to visit my brother 2 weeks after I had the glandular fever in London, and the night before I lost £200 that I got exchanged, and I was just completely, I just dissociated from it. I didn't understand or comprehend the seriousness of it. And when I went over to London, I was only meant to get one train and one tube, and I ended up getting three trains and three tubes because I was so lost.
Right.
I was very, very confused. And when I got over there, we were meant to go to Wimbledon, and I slept in. Like, I was just extreme tiredness. My personality was just really out of sorts. So what happened after that was, well, I got home, and about 2 weeks after I got home from London, my nana passed away, and I have absolutely no memory of that. Like, I went to the funeral, and I have no memory. And that's really when my memory got cut off. And about 2 weeks after that, then, it was my birthday, and I was finding it hard to get out of bed. I was just so tired. I was having headaches. I was very confused. I was seeing triple of everything. I remember I worked in a deli, like in a retail shop, mm-hmm. and I remember I was serving someone and I was looking down at the cash register to give him his change, and I saw a triple of the cash register, and I was trying to pick up the money, but I couldn't reach it. It was like
wow.
I was drunk or yeah. something. And I remember he screamed and screamed at me, so mad at me. And I just have a memory of just, and I had no speech at that time. Like, I couldn't speak. I don't know how I continued to work, but I just did. And he just went mental at me. And that's one thing that's kind of prevented me from going back to work, is just being scared that someone will get annoyed at me again.
Yeah.
But, the hospital
episode. You were yes. admitted to the hospital for depression.
Yes, I went down to my GP,
yeah.
and she said that the symptoms I was kind of expressing seemed like anxiety, and I was anxious, and I was anxious because I felt like nobody was helping me, because okay. I was asking, could I go see a speech therapist? Like, I was clued in enough to know that it wasn't psychological.
Yeah,
I was
great,
clued in.
Great,
yeah. like, I knew myself.
Yeah.
I know my body better than anyone else. I knew I wasn't depressed. But she, I remember my mum had to come in with me to the doctor, and the GP was like, you are depressed. And I just looked over at my mum with tears in my eyes, being like, please stand up for me. But obviously I couldn't speak. And she put me on Xanax and Lexapro, which actually just made me even more tired mm-hmm. and more zonked out. And I went back to her because obviously that didn't work. I went back to her again, and she said, well, the only option is now to send you to St. John of God Psychiatric Hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was put in there 10 days after my 21st birthday. I was just driven off and told I had to go in. And I had no speech, so I couldn't, you know, stop yeah. it. Everything was just happening so quickly, and I had no speech to even stand up for myself. So I was admitted there, and was there for just a little bit over 2 days. And I just kind of felt like everyone was interrogating me. Everyone was just trying to find a trauma that had happened in my life that would have triggered this sudden mental breakdown.
Yeah.
But there was no trauma to be found because I wasn't having a mental breakdown. And I remember one doctor or psychologist said to me, you know, you're not going to get any better like if you don't talk about it. And I couldn't talk because little did I know my brain was damaged at the time. But
they presumed, Hannah, you were, and some children do it, they just refused to talk.
Yeah, they thought I was just not willing to help myself. They thought I wasn't willing to accept a mental illness diagnosis. And that wasn't the case at all. It was that I actually couldn't speak. When I did speak, it was slurred.
Yeah.
And then I was there 2 days, and this really, really clued in psychologist actually okay. just listened to me when I asked for actual help. She, like, tickled my feet, and one of my foot didn't react. And she kind of got, like, an indicator that maybe one side of my brain wasn't working. So she sent me off for an MRI. And within 24 hours of getting that MRI, I was whisked off to A&E, St. Vincent's. And it was there a neurologist assessed me. And I spent 5 days in a general ward before they took me on neurology, which I deteriorated really bad there because they still didn't really know what it was. They were testing me for meningitis,
yeah.
for lupus, for everything. But 5 days after being on the ward and after observing me, they suspected I had encephalitis. So they took a lumbar puncture, and they don't even test for the type of encephalitis I have over in Ireland. So it had to be sent off to Oxford in England. And came back 3 weeks later that I had anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis, which is a really rare form of it. It was only discovered 10 years ago. So if I got it 10 years ago, I'd be dead, 100%. So it mainly affects women at childbearing age because it's usually associated with an ovarian tumour yeah. that contains brain cells, which makes the immune system get confused and attack the brain. But I actually didn't have the tumour, so I've got a higher risk now of relapsing.
Mm.
But they think it was triggered by the glandular fever.
Yeah. Now, you say in your communication with us here, you have to use post-its, the sticky notes everywhere.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
So the repercussions of having encephalitis is that I have an acquired brain injury now.
Yeah.
And my difficulties now are my memory and my speech and then just sound and being in like loud places. So my memory was really, really badly affected when I first got better. My boyfriend of 6 years came in to see me, and I didn't know who he was.
Well, no.
So I had to do, like, a security test on him. I had to ask him questions that only he would know to prove that it was him.
It's not funny. You didn't recognise him. Either.
I know him. Yeah, we've been going out since we were 16. I know him since I was 5, because he lives down the road from me, and I didn't know him.
And where did you come up with the idea of security questions? Well, obviously.
No, I was just like, well, I knew I had a boyfriend,
yeah.
but I didn't know him. I didn't recognise his face. I knew I had a boyfriend, but I just didn't know him. I didn't think it was him, his real one. I didn't think he was the real person. I was really suspicious of everyone. I don't know why that went, but I don't know why. I was really suspicious of everyone when I first got better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't remember him, and like I didn't like if I was I had to have like reminders on my phone for everything, like for my meds and things like that. Like if I didn't have a reminder on my phone, or if my mom wasn't monitoring me, I'd forget that I took my morning tablets and I might take them again. So there's dangerous things like that that you have to be really
and
aware of.
Where do you what's the purpose of the post-its, the yellow stickers?
It's like reminding myself. Like even when I first came to hospital, I'd have post-it notes just to remind myself to shower and to get dressed. And to brush my teeth and to have breakfast. Like, I couldn't remember every day task.
Wow.
But now, my post-it notes, I've kind of gotten... You kind of, like, settle into a new normal and you kind of get into a routine. So now I don't need to remind myself to do those things. But I need to remind myself to do other things. Like, if I'm meeting up with a friend, I'll forget. So I have to remind myself. I have to have a post-it note and a reminder on my phone to double up.
And how... Did your memory disappear completely?
I don't remember from August to November of 2017. No memory of it. It's like I fell asleep and I just didn't wake up until November. I have no memory of it.
So how do you know what happened to you?
So I got a lot of the information from my parents, my boyfriend and my friends.
Yeah.
And also I took my medical records. I got them out last summer.
Yeah,
and
your medical records. Okay, yeah.
I went through them meticulously. So that's how I have dates and... specific kind of names of drugs I was on. Like, that's... my doctor, when I go into him, like, I'm there with him for, like, an hour asking him questions of what happened to me.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And what's the prognosis?
Well, when I first got diagnosed, my neurologist now said to my parents, he's treated 5 people with this before, and 3 survived but are severely disabled, and then the 2 others had passed away. So that was my prognosis, was to be disabled or to die.
No.
So he said, I'm the best... case he's ever had. So, I didn't have a good prognosis, but I kind of beat the odds, and I went back to college 9 months after I woke up. I did my final year in college, and I'm living life day by day and thankful for each day that I get.
Yeah.
But I do have a 24% chance of relapsing. So there is always that worry. Every time I forget something or every time I slur my speech, I do worry, am I relapsing?
And you're still very, very young.
I'm only 22. It's weird to have to worry about debt when you're only 22. Yeah, it's strange.
And...
But, like, you kind of just take every day as a good day. Like, you know, like I could be dead. And there's so many people that do die from this. I'm very, very lucky. Because it's like 8 in 10 people die even with a diagnosis of encephalitis. And I'm just very lucky that I... Yeah. survived and that I'm able to live and not just survive. I'm glad I'm, you know, out of a wheelchair and I can walk and I can talk and I can dress myself.
And like, was that the position you were in?
I was in a wheelchair, yeah.
Yeah.
I was bedbound. I was catatonic. I had to have bed baths to be fed. And, like, my boyfriend was feeding me my food and, you know, everything had to be done for me. I couldn't brush my teeth. I couldn't even lift up a cup of water. I had to learn how to do everything again. I had to learn how to write my name again. Mm-hmm. I had to start from... baby. Like, I was a baby in a 21-year-old's body.
Because I was thinking when you were telling me that there earlier on, Anna, about you're looking over at your mother with tears in your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, well, could you have written her a note? You couldn't, obviously.
No, I was really losing all senses. Everything was going. I couldn't even dress myself. My mom said that when I first got admitted into hospital, the first day, mom was like, you need to have a shower. And I went into the shower and I picked up the shower head and I put it over my head and I still had my pajamas on. I didn't know you know what I mean? Like, I had lost complete sense of how to look after myself. And then when it came to me being catatonic, I physically couldn't move. Everything was locked. I was just, like, locked in my body.
It's like this encephalitis, this anti-NMDA receptor, and was holding you hostage.
Essentially, I was just locked inside my body.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was absolutely terrifying, but you just kind of... I'm just so thankful that I actually did survive and that I'm not I'm not disabled. I can actually walk and I can talk. And, like, the way when you have a cold, you have a blocked nose and you feel better when it's gone. You're like, oh, I appreciate being able to breathe. Like, now I appreciate just being able to walk and talk and, you know, eat my own food and not have to have a feeding tube anymore and stuff. It's you kind of more... You're more grateful than anything that you actually survived it.
And Emer on Friday, well, there's lots of people that would say, yeah, with similar, but Emer on Friday was saying that she can remember people from before,
yeah,
she became unwell. She was 21 as well, by the way.
Yeah.
She's had it for 14 years. Now, she can remember if she knew somebody or knew of a singer or whatever when she was, before she this illness hit her, she can remember them. But she can't remember, she didn't know who Michael D is, didn't know who the Taoiseach was, didn't... Can you remember your childhood, Hannah? I presume you can.
Thank God, I can remember.
Okay.
I know there's people that are completely white. Like, I knew my mum and dad. Like, it just took me a while to kind of, like, remember them fully. It took me about 2 weeks just to kind of remember everyone. Like, my boyfriend made me, like, because it was, like, coming up to Christmas when I got better, he made me, like, an advent calendar with photos of us every day. And that helped me, like, reignite my memory. So people showing me photos and stuff. And people would be like, do you remember that? And, like, just keep on saying it every day, like, repetition. But then again, some memories I'm like, do I remember that? Or is that just because people are telling me that happened, you know? It's hard to differentiate between real memories and just what people have told you.
Yeah. And the question, obviously, that people asked, you know, when you mentioned, and Emer, by the way, was the same. When she woke up, she was engaged to be married.
Oh, yeah, God.
And she didn't remember who the man was.
Yeah.
And this man came in and said, who are you?
Yeah.
Now, as it happened, it didn't work out. Are you telling me... How did you get on? I'm being blunt.
Me and my boyfriend, we're still together. We're like 6.5 years together now. We've been together since we were 16.
But he disappeared. He disappeared from your memory.
He just worked really hard to help me remember him, and like, you know, he just stuck by me and looked after me and was there for me.
Incredible.
There was no, you know, he was there for me. He was a good friend to me.
Yeah.
You know.
And is he the same?
Sorry?
When you fell in love with him originally, did you have to fall in love with him again?
No, I think it was just there. It was like an instinct, you know.
Yeah.
I just didn't believe him at the start that it was actually him. He just looked different. Maybe because his beard grew or something when I was asleep. I just...
And everyone... It sounds like you generate... incredibly positive reactions, Hannah, from your family, from your boyfriend. God, I'm just thinking what they must have gone. I know what you went through, being held hostage by this awful illness.
Yeah.
It's trapped in your own body, not being able to speak, not being able to write, not being able to know people. Your mind, people thinking your mind is gone, people thinking that you're self-decided to become mute or whatever. And on the other hand, you went through catastrophe.
Yeah.
But the people around you, your chap, your family, they must have gone through complete bafflement.
They did. Like, my parents, like, when your kids are 21, they're like, you know, about to leave the nest, but they kind of resorted back to me being a baby. My parents had to, like, look after me, you know, from, like, as if I was completely dependent on them. And my boyfriend as well, like, he took it really bad, and my parents, they all took it really bad. My brothers were away in America and England at the time, so, you know, they were away from it, and that probably wasn't easy, they couldn't come in to see me as much. Mm. Everyone took it really bad. I think I took it the best, to be honest. I'm kind of looking after everybody else sometimes.
Sounds like it.
I don't know, maybe I was forced to deal with it a bit more because I had to live with it every day. But I think there is a level of trauma to it all. It was a traumatic experience for everyone involved.
And how long did you spend in hospital, Hannah?
105 days. Exactly. So, like, nearly 4 months.
So you were 2 days in John of God's and then the rest in the general hospital for the medical condition.
Because you
didn't have a psychiatric or a psychological condition, even though the initial reaction was to diagnose it as such.
Exactly. And the more you say, I'm not crazy, the more people think you're crazy. And that was exactly the case. But then I came out of hospital just before Christmas in 2017, and then I didn't get into rehab till the end of February. So I had to go to rehab afterwards. I had to go for, you know, occupational therapy, speech therapy, physiotherapy. And I actually enjoy kind of rehab. Rehab is grand because I get to go home at the end of the day. It was like just being in school Monday to Friday or college.
And then you say here, I woke up one Sunday very scared and you tried to escape from where? That was a hospital, was it?
Yeah, I'd have no memory of this. I read it in my medical records and then I asked my parents about it and they explained it to me. Apparently I tried to escape one time and I had to be taken away by two security guards. they found me at the cafe. I was probably trying to buy chocolate or something. But, yeah, apparently I just kept on trying to escape. And then also I had, so for plasma exchange, I had two tubes in my chest. And I had no idea why they're in there. And apparently I kept on trying to pull them out. And I have to be, you know, held down a lot and sedated. So I was sedated a lot of the time because I was trying to pull the tubes out of me.
Did you? And I'm conscious as well. Like there's other people who contact as well with other stories. But I honestly don't want to put you through listening to other people as well. They're really, really good people as you are. But it's more difficult stories. I don't know how do you find hearing other people talking about not similar, but conditions which have some of the characteristics of what you have, Hannah. But you.
I'm okay talking about it. At least, like, with other people, I've talked to loads of people who have had the same as me, and it's kind of comforting because they know exactly how it feels. Because it's not a situation, it's not something that you can just describe, it's only something you can feel. And, I think it's fine hearing, like, when someone else says something, it's like, oh my God, I feel that as well. And it's just comforting to know that other people feel the same way. In a weird way, it's comforting. But it doesn't upset me. To be honest with you, what happened to me doesn't really upset me. I only think about it when I have to, when I have to get an MRI or a doctor's appointment. But to be honest with you, it doesn't really upset me.
So there's learning here for a lot of people. There's learning here for people who are dealing with, when you're going through one episode, you were seeing triple and the customer in the shop. What, he thought you were...
I don't know what he thought I was doing, but I just...
But he was really
screaming.
Nasty.
Yeah, he was absolutely screaming.
Come on, people don't know. People don't deliberately...
They're not patient.
behind a checkout, don't deliberately start pretending that they can't find where the till is or...
Yeah.
And then the other learning is for medics.
Yes, 100%. And, like, if one person could be hearing this, and they might have a daughter or co-worker that is showing those symptoms, or even a med student that has never heard of it, you know, that would, like, how amazing would that be if they could recognise it in someone?
Quickly.
Because that's the thing about the brain, it's all about time.
Yeah,
the more time I was left undiagnosed, more brain damage I got.
Okay, so stay with us, Hannah.
Yeah.
David Payne has contacted us. David, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Okay, how are you, David? Can I begin? What happened to you and what the symptoms are?
Right. At the end of 2000, I was working for a PA consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I was at business and IT was my forte, you know. And I got three children, Jenny, Holly and Niamh. Niamh was 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of 2000. I was in for in St. Vincent's Hospital for... blood poisoning, septicemia.
Yeah.
And I was in for blood poisoning, septicemia, and I got a severe stroke out of it.
Yeah.
I was rushed to Beaumont, and David Aldcott operated on me. He says it was the worst case of severe stroke in Ireland.
Yeah.
I was 37.
Okay.
When I got it, I was in Beaumont for about 3 months, and then I was transferred to the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary for 10 months. I couldn't speak. I couldn't walk.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't move. I was in a locked ward. I couldn't remember anything. My three kids, my memory was gone. I started from scratch again. My speech therapy, physio, and everything was, I don't know. And now I can't. I am. Sorry.
Yeah, take your time.
I can't do my PA career was over. I cannot. My memory was my short term memory was I can't remember anything. yesterday was a complete gone.
And David, just you're saying that to me now. That is yesterday a blank to you?
Complete blank. Only on my phone.
Okay.
On my iPhone.
So yesterday Sunday.
Yes.
Lots of sports on, lots of activities, but that's a blank to you.
Yeah, but I put it down on my phone.
Okay, great.
You know that I put it down immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's your diary. Emer on Friday was telling it. That's, she keeps a diary. She now has 14 volumes, one for every year.
Yeah.
And she writes down, because she has to keep it. So that's, and she was saying, and I think other people saying that smartphones and iPads are great help in the scenario. So can you remember this morning, David?
No.
No, okay. And then your family.
Oh yeah, I have three kids. Yeah.
Okay.
I remember them.
Okay.
And my granddaughter, Nisha, she's three.
Oh great.
Yeah. Okay. My brother, Garrod, was there.
Yeah.
In St. Vincent's Hospital with it's touch and go, you know, and
in terms of like obviously you improved, David.
Oh yeah.
And does that continue?
Yes. Okay. I had. I'm under control of Cheshire Homes.
Oh yeah, you're under the care, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of Cheshire Homes. And also I'm going to Open Door.
Oh yeah.
Tuesday and Friday. Now EasyCAD is gone now, and I'm trying to get a cab for a Friday and no luck.
Explain that. Sorry, David, you get a lift. Is it a cab? Did you say a cab on a Friday?
Yeah. No, a cab. I used to go to Open Door in Bray.
Okay.
I do an art.
Oh, lovely.
I used to. How do you say it?
So you're saying on Friday you need a wheelchair accessible taxi? Is that what you? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
and you're saying the one you've normally used is now gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you say it? Easy cabs are folded.
Oh, have to. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
And David, just so I might be able to help. The journey is from where to where? It's out to Bray, is it?
My home is in Rochestown Avenue.
Okay. Well,
and I'm looking for transport, and I can't get it. And I tried everything from phone calls to,
So you need every Friday at what time, David?
10 o'clock until 3.
Okay, so you need to be collected at 10 o'clock from the Cheshire Home and Rochestown Avenue,
brought
to Bray that journey, and then collected again at 3.
Yeah.
And we need a wheelchair accessible taxi.
Yes.
Okay, we'll put that call out there. If there's anyone in the area that can even start this Friday, and hopefully with the word will go out. You also say in your communication, David, to us that you can't spell.
I can't spell. No, I can't. I can't. I used to spell fluently, but I can't spell at all. That's because of the stroke I got. And my iPhone is my speller.
Yeah, great.
I put it in my iPhone, and my iPhone is great.
Brilliant, 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 brilliant.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've a good attitude, even though, as you say, you were struck down when you were a very young man.
Yeah, but I am 57 now, or almost 57.
So
and
20 years ago.
I know.
And you're still a young man.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward, you know, and how do you say it? I'm looking forward, and I don't look back.
So as far as you're concerned, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth either. Take your time. But as far as is the future, hopefully, will get better. Will get brighter.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. I get lonely sometimes, but you know, that's you know.
I understand. I can understand why you get lonely as well, David.
Yeah.
David Payne. Hannah, how are you at this stage? You okay, Hannah?
Yeah.
Okay. And you heard David's situation there. Hannah, you said you were studying. What are you studying?
Psychology. Oh, funnily enough.
Surprise.
Yeah.
And Hannah, and you're brilliant at it. But you also say you're afraid to go back to work because people sometimes don't understand, and you're afraid of another one of those episodes.
Yeah, just from that instance where that man was rude to me, that kind of just stuck with me, and I can see his angry face all the time. I can never get that image out of my head. So if I was to go back to retail, I don't think I'd be able to go back to that place.
Yeah.
I suppose there is an element of, PTSD. Like, you do have trauma, and you do get nightmares.
Yeah.
And
Hannah, would you say to yourself, that man who lost a head with you, would you turn... Like, he didn't know.
Yeah.
But maybe he had... There's no justification for what
he
did now.
You never
there's no
know
justification.
What's going on in
someone's life. But sometimes...
Yeah.
The only way you can deal with someone like that, you say to yourself, that's his problem.
Exactly.
The poor man could have got bad news this morning about his child or something.
Yeah, 100%.
And that might allow you to park that and move on.
100%, because you just never know what's going on in someone's life.
Yeah.
You know, with me...
There's no justification for it, but anyway...
Yeah.
Okay, Hannah, thanks indeed. Kind regards to your family and to your chap. You won't give me his name. Will you? You won't give me his first name. No.
His name's Ross.
Ross, you're great people. Great people.
Thank you.
David, I'm saying for that taxi, we're looking for a wheelchair accessible taxi on a Friday to go from Rochestown Avenue in Dunleary out to Bray, 10 o'clock, and then the collection. They're paid, obviously. Our phone number is 1850 715 815, and 51551 is our text number if you can help in that area. David, kind regards, and thank you so much for contacting us. And you're still a young man, and it's a privilege to listen to you. Kind regards, David, and love to you, Hannah, as well. Mind yourselves. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Tom Green. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Encephalitis, it visited your family tragically. What happened?
Well, my great wife fell ill on the famous Jazz Weekend in Cork in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to the, what we call A&E, and Friday, which is a type of stroke symptom. And luckily, the day before, her sister had arrived from America, the next nurse, and was able to assist me there. And so she was in the A&E, as we call it, and moved upstairs to a ward over the Jazz Weekend. And on the Tuesday, then, the neurology team from across the house in the Mercy University Hospital came and diagnosed her as having encephalitis, and at that stage had lapsed into a coma. And she remained so for quite a bit, and she in fact never came home from the Mercy at all. She died there on the 10th of May of last year, 2018. So it wasn't as lucky as Hannah and the other people who you've had to speak to. And I must say, the only reason I'm calling you really is because, like Hannah, is to make people aware, and to, like, when I say people, I mean all people, but medical people and, you know, those folks on the ground, that things are not always what they might seem to be, you know.
Yeah. And the symptoms are flu-like at the beginning.
Indeed, yeah. The week before, Philip was a member of a choir in Cork, the Corgal Choir, who were a fantastic bunch of people. And they had a concert on the weekend before in the Catholic Cathedral in Cork, there with Michelle Collins and a few others. And in a celebration afterwards, the next day they had a visited Field of Dreams, which is out there in Corrigan in Cork.
Tom, I need again to check the line. Stay with us, please. That's Tom Green. I'll get a bell.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Sean Smith, unfortunately, what happened to your daughter, Sean?
Hi, Joe. 3 years ago, we brought her down to A&E, mm-hmm. and she had bad migraine, okay. as we thought at the time.
Yeah.
And they gave her some painkillers and sent her home. And then 3 days later, we brought her back again. Because she was constantly vomiting,
okay,
and then she they put on a drip and gave her fluids, and then she had a kind of episode within A&E, and she got very aggressive, and so they decided to do a scan of her brain, and they were going to do a lumbar puncture then and see how she was there, so the scan came back clear. Right. And he says they said that they give her something to eat and see will she hold it down, I said, well, what about the lumbar puncture? So I insisted on getting the lumbar puncture. So we got the lumbar puncture done, and they showed white blood cells in her spinal fluid. Right. So that was it. So they kept her in that night, and then when we came in the next morning, she was actually unresponsive to us. She had to sedate her because she was paranoid schizophrenia going on,
right.
And they kept her in, so they put her, they had her sedated, and then the doctors came around again. They thought it was meningitis, and so they were going to put her antivirals and antibacterials, but they weren't too sure what it was.
And did they diagnosed? Well, they diagnosed encephalitis.
Well, she started to go downhill then, Joe, and her blood pressure, all her critical vital signs were crashing, and then on the 15th of the month, they actually put her on life support, and induced coma,
yeah.
And they moved out to Beaumont, but still at this time they still didn't know what was wrong and what was happening to her body and why. She was going like this. So they moved out to Beaumont, and all tests. She was getting tests. She was getting CT scans, MRIs, ECGs. Her blood were going to Manchester for Rare Diseases, Our Lady's Children's Hospital, Cambridge Street Children's Hospital. All these for these tests, and everything was coming back negative. They couldn't find what was wrong with her. They didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And so anyway, went out to Beaumont, they transferred her to Beaumont then, and she wanted to tell Professor Healy, and so they test all done again, and then on Wednesday he came to us and he says, guys, we have to do something now. If we don't do something now, you're going to lose your daughter. So
take your time, Sean.
So they said, if you don't do something within the next 3 to 12 hours, we're going to lose your daughter. Yeah. So we need to do something now. So they start on the process of chemotherapy and plasma exchange and steroids, because her brain had swelled so much. So she was on that there for nearly 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they started to bring her over a coma. They had to do a trachee. Blah blah blah, and then she started to come out, but eventually, and so she lost 65% of her muscle mass, and she 65% of her muscle mass, and she was lost 3.5 stone in weight, and sometimes they just don't know to this day what caused it.
Yeah.
There's no like those, but why I'm bringing the show is to let people know. That, you know, we went in there and just people hadn't a clue what this was.
Yeah.
And the more people know about it, the better. Because, you know.
And have to put a name on it, Sean.
Well, it's the diagnosis came from
Oxford University.
And
it was called NMDA, autoimmune encephalitis. The encephalitis is because it got into our heads and it's killing the cells in our brain.
Yeah.
And that's what horrid. But there has been a few people that have had it since.
Yeah, now what Hannah had earlier, Hannah Farrell, she had anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis. Has your daughter got a variation of that?
A variation of that, correct. Now, there was a book written by a girl, and she worked for the New York Times, and the name of the book was Brain on Fire.
Okay.
And she actually there's a movie about it, and it actually lets people know what this condition is. But really, here, what I'm saying is, when she presented into the hospital, nobody knew what they were dealing with.
Yeah.
And my big thing, and that's why you're coming up here, is that just to let people be aware that you know, there is some things out there, and they just don't know what it is, you know?
And how is your daughter now?
She's wonderful. She's back to college. She's walking, but she's still on immune suppressants.
Yeah.
And she's getting chemo every 6 months to try to keep these NMDAs, which are still in her body, to keep them at bay.
Yeah.
But it's still there. You don't know when it'll actually go from the body as yet. It's still there. She's living with us, basically.
Okay. God, you've been through an awful lot. Your daughter's been through a lot.
It was a tough time. When you see your daughter there lying in the bed, and people are telling you, we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's frightening. But it's about knowledge to other people out there, to let them know about it. Yeah. And that's all I really come on to say. Give her a story and just let people know, you know, never take it for granted it's this or that. But, you know, you never know because you just don't know.
Okay, well done, Sean. Well done. And you explained that well, even though the memory, and some recent memory as well, that brought up was pretty traumatic, to say the least.
Yeah, it puts things into perspective, I can tell you.
Yeah, okay, Sean. Kind regards to you and your daughter and your family. That's Sean Smith. That's all today. Andrew Kames on Sound, Laura Lee Davis, the BCO, Tara Lockery, Grant produced, and Ray Darcy is live from Ballycollig in Cork after this.